Welcome, everyone. I'm Carrie Blakeman, and I work for the AICPA on our Engagement and Innovation Learning team. And I'm here today with Cynthia Hetherington, who is a speaker at this fall's AICPA Forensic Evaluation Services Conference. Welcome, Cynthia. Thank you so much for being with us. Will you please let our audience know a little bit about yourself?
Well, hello, Carrie, and hello, listeners. Thank you very much for joining me. My name is Cynthia Hetherington. I am the president and owner of the Hetherington Group. We're an expert investigations and intelligence company. I'm a presenter, a returning presenter with our conference coming up, which I'm real excited about. What I get to bring to the table in a room full of experts is my 25 plus years of doing due diligence and online research investigations. So I'm excited to join the call to offer some tips and pointers to what we do and to be part of this organization.
Great. Thank you so much. So what 5 points from your conference session or something that you see as a hot topic would you like to bring up with our audience today?
Carrie, what I'm real excited to share with you is just I like to put things in packages. I like to know there's a front and an end to something. So I'm going to put this under 5 points. We're calling it 5 knowledge points for conducting online due diligence. And there's just 5 strenuous pieces to your due diligence that you're conducting, whether it's domestic or abroad. And I'd like to share that with our listeners today. And of course, at our conference, we'll be drawing it out into the nth degree.
Great. So what is your first point? And then can you tell us maybe a little bit more about what you mean with it?
Well, in 5 points, I mean, the first item we want to know is who are we investigating? So knowing your company, and these are knowledge points. So everything's going to start with knowledge. Know your company. It sounds like a silly thing to say, like, what do you mean by knowing your company? But you need to know the actual firm or business, or most importantly, the people behind the company, because companies don't just fabricate themselves, people create them. And again, it sounds like, well, gee whiz, how do we not know who the company is? But there's a lot of trusts, there's a lot of shell companies, there's a lot of business fronts, absolutely legitimate, not illegitimate, but just a fabrication on paper in order to be in front of the entire entity that runs. And if there is a litigation or evaluation that needs to be done in that company, we need to know really who's behind it. So it would be, say, my first point.
So how would one go about hunting down that actual company name or the actual company?
When we're trying to identify the true identity behind a company, it could be something as sincere and as simple as doing web searches for them. You know, locate an actual website for the company, find out if they have an About Us page, locate who's responsible, because they'll name themselves. You know, this is my CEO, this is my CFO. And then you could use from there, you know, from a simple Google search, you can use the databases and resources we have at our conferences and under our noses all the time. Everyone from Thomson Reuters, LexisNexis, Dun & Bradstreet, they help us establish and validate, because they've already gone out and pulled the public records, which validate the hearsay information you get from the web. And just to be crystal clear on this, the hearsay is I can create a website that says Cynthia's company and it looks legitimate. It feels like a company, but it could be completely fraudulent. Dun & Brad, LexisNexis, Thomson Reuters, many of these credit services and valuation services will actually have real public records on these firms, which are generated by the state, the government, or even the municipality, you know, the province, wherever we're looking. So we'll have real hardcore material underneath that to buttress it up and tell us, all right, I know who I'm looking at.
So in thinking about that, everything that goes into just even looking down or looking up the real company name. But I heard a few key words in that. I heard, you know, well, first you said something about kind of like a global audience or not, you know your jurisdiction. And also you mentioned, you know, something being public versus private. So what's the next step in someone trying to think through those, you know, keywords that may be certain requirements that they have to be careful of?
Well, it's a fun game doing due diligence on companies, because first you have to locate them. I mean, someone could literally put a company name in front of you and you have no idea if they're in Tijuana or Singapore or Ohio. So that's what we start with. I mean, as simple as it sounds, a Google search. We're always going to come back to public records, which are going to be the foundation of our investigative due diligence, because the public record is the company, or the entity, or the people who create it, giving to their government, whether, again, Tijuana in Mexico, Singapore, or Ohio State, they're giving those state officials notice that we are active, we are here, you should be taxing us, you should be oversighting us. And that's a big part of the compliance. So my second point is, know the compliance requirements for the company and for you as the investigator. This is a two-pronged fork here, because for us as investigators, as valuators, as researchers, we need to know within the United States, for example, you know, everything from enhanced due diligence to the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act. We now have the GDPR coming out of Europe. I mean, there's so many compliance laws that restrict us, but also empower us and give us guidance as to how we should conduct our investigations. Where is the threshold that I can push my research to? And where do I know I can put a good hard stop on, because I don't want to cross anyone's federal laws, whether they're mine or in other countries. But on the flip side of compliance, these companies have to participate with their governments. They have to give them certain information, which it helps me if I'm not finding standard business forms filed within Ontario or Ohio or Singapore. Well, that means that they're sliding their own government and they're probably a shell company or a fabrication of an entity that doesn't truly exist.
So that was a lot. It was a lot of good information, but a lot. So if I'm someone who's trying to think through this, one of my questions would be, is it worth paying, you know, money for this, using my resources for all these databases, when you have mentioned some of it is free?
So Carrie, this is a great point to bring up. Like, it's a lot. Let's unpack this. Take a big step back, have almost a yoga moment and say, you know, well, we just had a case. Let me give you an example. A building fell down in Mexico. My client's name is attached to the building. Cynthia, go ahead and find out who's behind the building, who owns the building. And the first thing that we located in this state in Mexico was that the building was owned by a trust, which was run through a bank. So there were no people, there was no owner, there was no business, there was not an office of secretaries and business developers sitting there we can investigate. It was just a name. So my next step is just to, how would I handle it? And you know what? Embrace what you know. So how would we handle this in the United States? In the United States, buildings just don't pop up. There's an oversight of occupational safety, Department of Environmental Safety. There's all these departments. There are people they have to pay taxes to. So I then take that focus that I know of my own knowledge, and I try to apply it in Mexico. And I ask the people that are doing investigations work or assistance in Mexico, is there a building code officer? Somebody has to come and say, you could put a staircase here, you could put a well there. Who's the building code officer? That's a compliance requirement. And ironically, in the accounting business, we don't think about the guys who build the buildings. We're so focused on the numbers and the federal compliance guidelines and all the things that we have great conferences on. But, you know, sometimes the building code guy has the best intelligence information, which is where we found our information. Because the building code guy said, well, this is the person who signed off on all of the inspections we did. And he gave me his name and I was able to follow through on that. So to unpack that very heavy compliance requirement and know your compliance, I then know to go to my sources. And the way I think about my sources is, who handles whatever I'm dealing with at this moment? Who's going to help me gather this? To keep this back on our desktops and not having people running around all over the country and know your sources, my third point, we're going to use our databases. We're going to use our resources. I've named a few already, and I absolutely adore, love, use, and subscribe to all of the above of Thomson Reuters, LexisNexis, Dun & Bradstreet, Standard & Poor's, Capital IQ. I mean, I could just, my office alone has 3,500 resources. We never leave our desks. We do everything from our desktops. So we have to be super equipped, and having the very best databases in front of us helps us do our job to support our clients and their due diligence.
So I do hope you leave every now and then to do yoga, because that would be fun, since you mentioned it. But going back to our talk here, how far is enough? When I think of when I do research, that is an overwhelming question just for me personally of thinking the entire research project, you know, how far do I go before I turn something into a client? So what are your thoughts there?
Talking about the yoga moment, right? How far have you pushed yourself? You know, if you hear something twang or it hurts, then you've gone far enough in yoga, right?
Yeah.
Knowing your research, this is the question I get asked in class all the time. I get emailed, Cynthia, you know, gee whiz, how did I look up enough? Did I find enough? And it's especially futile when you're not finding stuff and you're like, I just got to keep looking. The old investigator adage is if you walk around a tree and find your own footprints, you're done. But the truth of it is, Carrie, is that when the budget and your time run out, that's when you're done. I mean, your clients do not have forever. We're not writing books for Tom Clancy and having months and months and months on end to research these things. We have to give ourselves not only a budget and an expectation of what we're going to produce, but we need to know what our expectations of what to find and what we're looking for. A seasoned analyst kind of gets that they've taken it to the end result, and that sometimes the answer to the client is that there is no answer. But quite in fact, that is the answer. We've looked up this company. We don't find any entities associated to it. There is a loose association through some sort of corporation's records company that created this firm. You know, we would recommend, you know, going to the facility, looking at the building, seeing if anyone pulls up, you know, following the lead person we think is. But a lot of times a shell company is constructed just like vapor, and tracking down that information is long and intensive. So our first run, our phase one research, is to establish that that's the kind of company it is, and it's going to take a lot more energy, effort, and budget to get there. And most times, in most cases, our clients satisfied with that. They wanted to know, they wanted to check box that this is truly just a shell corporation and not something that we need to go too deep on.
Great. So once you're reaching that point in the engagement and you've sent something out, what's that final step that you would recommend?
This is the fifth, and this is and my know your company, know your compliance, know your sources, know your research. This is what I'm saying is know your product and client. And this is the most important step. And sadly, this is the one that's missed by many of my colleagues in the field and sometimes myself. You know, we kick out a report and we're done. We get paid. You know, we're like, wow, okay, that's over. But you want to keep an eye on what that issue was or that concern was, because it could return. It could be a follow-up. It could be 7 years down the road and you're testifying in court on it. You also want to find out if your client was satisfied with the work that you had conducted. You know, even a report you send to them that doesn't have very much information in it, or, you know, it wasn't the end that they wanted, because we're not here to give expectations of good answers. We're here to just give the expectations of what's truthful. You know, so following up with the client, what my practice is here with my team is we continually monitor the cases that we work on. We don't spend all day on them, but we will check in and see, you know, follow the news, follow the social media, follow the issues, so that if we have to ramp back up again quickly, we're reticent as to the information and understand what we need to work on and are ready to engage the client again. Sometimes we're keeping an eye on for the client. We're actually reintroducing the client to their own cases because they've let it go too. And key information that we missed earlier comes up later, and we will, you know, a month, 3 months, even a year from the case, go back to the client and say, remember that guy you were tracking? He just showed up in this country. So knowing the client and their product is real important.
That's neat. Well, thank you so much, Cynthia, for being with us today. Any final words, parting words for the audience?
My appreciation to your time and attention, most of all, and I'm excited to see many of you at the conference and looking forward to catching up with you. I'm real passionate about these 5 points because I think that this is more than just investigative tactics. This is good quality product development and customer service for the people we tend to. So this is a great lecture for those who are starting out, but also some of the seasoned folks as well. As always, I want to thank the AICPA folks for inviting me onto the podcast and asking me my thoughts on these things.
Great. Well, I hope everyone listening will follow up, as Cynthia said, and attend the conference either on-site or online. And we look forward to seeing you later this fall. Thanks.
Thank you.